Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 54, The Midsummer Snowstorm. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven, and 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore.
Hi.
Hi, Ed.
Hello, Doug.
Yes, Doug.
And anyone else? Is anyone else showing as being on, Steven?
I'm showing two folks, but okay. Doug's the only one that's commented.
You other folk out there, hi.
For anybody who's listening, if this is your first episode, we do these live on YouTube through a live stream through the Superman Super Show YouTube channel. And we have folks that join us through the YouTube chat. And so we often forget when we just start answering their questions that maybe somebody who's listening might not understand what it is we're doing.
We're just veering off into something really freaky there.
I used to worry about that, but I don't anymore.
Hey,
when I'm editing and I come across that in an episode, I'm just like,
you want to drop in? This is editor Steven here.
Do audio editor's notes.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that we stopped here because,
that's a lot of work. That's a lot of extra work right there.
I know
it's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. You know, it's like people will either understand or they just will not listen. It's either going to drive them crazy and they won't listen, or they will understand and they'll continue to listen. We have no control over that at all. So before we really get into any kind of banter, this is the normal portion in the episode where we have spontaneous banter that we typically make. You and I plan individually what our banter is going to be for every episode. Right, because that's the kind of people we are.
It's
pre-banted
banter.
Yes, it's preconceived banter. I got an email back on April 22nd. Not I, but the show did. And you and I had talked about, you brought up a couple of weeks back that it might be time for us to do another feedback episode, but We don't really have a lot of feedback.
Okay.
But this particular email, I felt I needed to share because it asks us a specific question. And I have been, we'll get to the question here in a second, but I've been ruminating on this question ever since this email came in, which was back on April 22nd. And I don't know that I have an answer. So I'm hoping you do. So I sent it to you earlier today.
Okay.
But it comes from Matthew Larson, and he says, following along with the podcast, first time through the Golden Age. In these early books, they routinely say Superman, champion of the helpless and oppressed. I see it in these books, but he's not really that today. He's facing off against Mongul and Darkseid. I don't read much modern comics. Do you know characters who have taken up that mantle today? And, you know, now that I read it, there is actual one that does kind of come to mind.
Okay.
And that's Superman's son, Jonathan Kent. He, if you've read Superman, Son of Kal-El, that series, it seemed like that's what they were kind of setting him up to be, was kind of like the superhero version of a social justice warrior. But he didn't, basically all he ended up really doing was standing up against the oppression of a dictator from another country who was oppressing people. So
those particular words, no, I certainly can't think of someone who has said that, which I you probably would never actually see somebody say that. But yeah. Even in the, you know, the narration at the beginning of a book, you don't see it too much now. But I know back in the 80s and 90s, like, say, a John Byrne, a Chris Claremont, there was some word slinging that they would do, and they would lock onto it, and it would be the exact same in every issue at the beginning, you know, a concept or something like that. But nobody really does. I think nobody really thinks that is necessary now. I don't know, but I don't run into that as much. So nobody says it. Now, somebody might think that in their mind as they're going about their, you know, quote unquote patrol or something like that.
Yeah.
I, helpless and oppressed, for some reason, puts me in mind of Black Lightning for DC.
Yeah.
So probably to me, about the only people that would do that, that would consider what they're doing as those descriptors, would have to be somebody that is quote unquote street level, somebody who lives with where they are superheroing, whether it be their block, their country, their even their planet, depending if they didn't get off planet and it was, you know, maybe a planet involved in some sort of civil war, or somebody was warring against them, a Ran Thanagar kind of thing or something like that. Yeah. But I think to consider the fact that you're helping the helpless and oppressed, I think it would take a really reduced point of view. You'd really have to be focusing in on, and I don't know, maybe there is somebody out there whose hero focuses on their, they are of the same as the people that they're helping, whether it be a racial or a kind of people like the Romanies, or, you know, something that is a smaller group of people. Otherwise, somebody like a Superman who is this big everybody everywhere all the time. Yeah, that
nine times out of 10, you have a superhero, whether they're street level or not. In the end, ultimately, they're fighting crime. You know, it's they're not specifically going out there and finding people who need to have somebody champion something for them. Doug says that he thinks Nightwing is kind of doing that now. And yeah, I would agree with that, especially I'm not 100% caught up on Nightwing, but you know, he started that foundation, to make, Bloodhaven a better place and to help homeless people and stuff like that. And then I think Green Arrow has always meant to be that kind of hero.
I was just thinking that,
whether or not, you know, depending on who writes him, really depends on whether or not he is that. When I think of like champion of the oppressed, it's like I almost think of somebody like the A-Team, who, you know, if you need help and you can't find it anywhere else, you know, cops aren't helping you, the government's not helping you, you know, you find the A-Team and they'll help. That's what I think of when I think of champion of the oppressed. But I mean, ultimately it's you know, somebody like a Green Arrow or a Batman or a Black Lightning who are down there in the on the streets getting rid of the types of crime that the police aren't. You can say that's being champion of the oppressed. So,
well, I mean, even, you know, as we're talking, thinking about somebody like Daredevil, who maybe gets pulled away, but his focus is always the people of Hell's Kitchen. Particular part of New York. He may have to go somewhere and do something else, but he always comes back there. And at night when he goes out, that's always where he goes out, is running around Hell's Kitchen. So he, you know.
And, you know, Superman, it's the Golden Age Superman for a lot of these stories. It is really specific. He's not just fighting crime. He's, you know, taking out crooked auto manufacturers because people are getting in too many wrecks. He's, you know, destroying tenement housing because the landlords aren't, you know, playing fair with their tenants. He's rescuing children from wayward youth homes and stuff like that. But, you know, in general, it's like what we've kind of gotten to nowadays is, you've got a guy like Daredevil who he focuses on Hell's Kitchen. He's there to help the people of Hell's Kitchen. But really what you see him doing most of the time is just fighting the supervillain of the moment that happens to be doing whatever they're doing
right
in Hell's Kitchen, whether it's a serial killer or bank robber or whatever. That's he's still 9 times out of 10, they are still kind of going up against more of the costume criminal element, right, more than, you know, I've noticed that there is a I don't know, that the car factories are building inferior cars and people are getting hurt because of it. So I've got to go in and destroy this car factory. You know, there's nothing that specific. But I think when we do talk about someone like a Daredevil or a Green Arrow or even a Spider-Man, that's kind of what they're doing. That's why they're considered street level heroes. They're not there to stop the alien invasion. They're there to help. They're
not the Avengers or the JLA, the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're not. Yeah. So following up with that, Matthew, you indicate that this is the first time reading Golden Age, but you don't read much Modern Age, which in my mind leaves the Silver and Bronze. If that's the case, what are your thoughts on someone in those eras or from whatever era of books that you're reading, whatever books that you're reading, that is a champion of the helpless and oppressed?
Yeah.
Take this question and volley it back your way and ask, you know, how would you answer this?
So speaking of Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Modern Age. So I think about this a lot, and I always mean to go and look it up, but I never do. But, you know, you talk about like the Golden Age of comics and the Silver Age and the Bronze Age. Those are particular eras. The Golden Age is like what, 38 to the
I think 50s,
so like mid 50s.
Yeah.
So you're looking at 15 years, maybe
roughly
15. And then the Silver Age is mid 50s to what, early 70s,
another 15 years roughly.
And then the Bronze Age then picks up around that time,
70 to 85, which turns out to be another 15 years.
So then the Modern Age just everything after that? Because that's pretty broad time frame. I don't know why they haven't come up with another age to take us from like the 80s, you know, mid 80s through the 90s, maybe into the from the back half of the 80s to 2000. You know, that needs to be its own age, frankly.
Because the people who worried about those names have lived through those other portions. They know and understand those other portions, even though they might not have a name for them. They know in their minds when things started and ended as far as thematically in comic books. So there's not necessarily a reason to name them because you've lived it. And when you see something, you know, oh, this is from then. Oh, yeah, he was writing then. And
well, but even still, I mean, think about folks who have come into comics over the last 10, 15 years. You know, as we roll into the 2000s, you're getting these new readers who talk about, you know, when I hear some of these whippersnappers, you know, talking about my Superman is the Superman from Birthright. That's when I started reading, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, When they look back then at the stuff that came before, there's a period there when the 80s go into the 90s, and really there's a huge shift thematically that goes from comics were more about the story, and then it just went boom, it was all flat. You know, not all of it, of course. I don't like it when people say that 90s comics suck, because I like to point out that there were quite a few comics that were created in the 90s that were pretty awesome.
Really good.
Madman always comes to mind. Madman, Hellboy, you know, they just, a lot of them weren't with Marvel or DC or Image Comics, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But I don't know. I have a feeling that at some point in the next 10 or 15 years, somebody's going to finally say, all right, this time frame is going to be known as the Image. And I'm sure Image will be part of it, part of the name. It's got to be, because that's kind of what the whole Image Comics boom is, kind of what defines that era to a certain extent. You know, we saw comics heading that way anyway, because guys like Rob Liefeld and you know, the guys that left Marvel to form Image, you know, but I don't know. I kind of have a feeling it's going to be like Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Image Age, something like that, you know, and then Modern Age.
Wouldn't be bad. I mean, if you think from, let's say, usually the end of the Bronze Age is considered to be, from every time I read about it, around the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, that's, makes sense.
That's kind of the end of that age. So that was 86, I think, is when that finished up. So another 15 years would be 2001. Yeah. Well, there's probably two or three things that happened in those 15 years to lump them all together.
Yep.
So you're looking at 4 or 5 year intervals there. And then from 2000 until, I don't know, really, to now, maybe, arguably, things haven't changed. So, and they don't look to be shit. Well, I don't know. Unless you want to say that one of these reboots of DC will mark the end and beginning of something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
New 52 or this Dawn of DC certainly won't be the end beginning of anything, because it's just a label. A lot of it is just status quo from what I can tell for the previous 3 or 4 years, the books I've read. So,
but ending the Bronze Age around 85 and 86 makes sense, because that is the point. Like you said, first you had Crisis ending, and that's a big thematic shift for DC Comics just right there.
Yeah.
But you've also got around 85 and 86, you've got stuff coming out like Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen.
Right.
You know, yeah. There's the whole darkness, you know, the dark and edgy kind of starts there. And for a lot of people, I mean, maybe not some of us, but for a lot of people, the whole dark and edgy kind of defines that era from like the late 80s into the 90s, you know?
Yes, but in the early 90s, right? In the early 90s, though, is when you start getting belts and pouches and leather and stuff like that, which is not dark and gritty. But that still exists. So it's like two big themes now are running side by side, depending on what you read.
And so you've always had creator owned books were always a thing going, like, you know, because you had like ElfQuest, TMNT blew up in the 80s. That's completely creator owned. But going into the 90s, I mean, that's when kind of the big, it felt like more of a creator owned renaissance at that point because of those guys forming Image Comics.
Because of Image. Because
then you get stuff like I said, like Madman and Hellboy and stuff that they had going on at Vertigo, you know, that even though they're DC stuff, they are still considered creator-owned books, because for a lot of those deals that those creators made to be in Vertigo, they still kind of owned a lot of that. But I think, I don't know, I feel like at some point in our lifetime before we are rested in a pine box, we're gonna see a new, they're gonna define that period as separated off as its own age.
Sure, eventually. There'll be a new age, maybe two, just depending to kind of catch us up. But I'll let other people who are worried about that. And
I'm a little worried.
Well, I'm like the people that I described. I lived it. So I can pick up a book and I can, to a large extent, I can place it within 2 or 3 years of when it came out before I even look at it, just looking at the cover. So I know the ages, even though I might not have a name for it. I can describe it enough to tell you why this is part of its own thing, you know, if you show me something. So that's good enough for me. I don't need to describe it for my collection or my books in plastic or my, you know, it's like I don't need any of that.
No, I get that. My brain, however, I feel like my brain needs to define. You know, I can look at like the stuff we're going to talk about today. I can look at that and go, oh, well, that's Golden Age.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at a Silver Age book and go, oh, that's Silver Age. But then you give me like an Image book, for example, like a Rob Liefeld or Spawn number one or something. And, you know, okay, that's 90s. But my brain wants to lump it into an age, you know, because then I go, well, it's a 90s book, but it's part of the modern age. But it doesn't really go side by side with maybe some of the stuff like that Tom King is doing for DC right now.
It's like
there's like a wide chasm between Youngblood number one and Danger Street that's going on right now. You know, mm-hmm. My brain, the whole neurodivergent thing I got going on, it needs to categorize it. But the lazy part of my brain doesn't want to do it. I don't want to have to categorize
it. Yeah.
So it's like, I need it to be named. I need that, but I'm not going to
call it modern age A.
Yeah.
And say A is until 2000 and then.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just, it's weird to think of books that came out. I mean, good Lord, Youngblood number one is 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to think that being in the modern age, but.
Well, and if you look, there are places, I think, where there is an atomic age that's delineated and another age after that. I think atomic age is what's after bronze. So it would be late 80s, early 90s to, I don't know, sometime. I haven't. But I have started running into atomic age used here and there. But it certainly is not something that is as widely agreed upon as gold, silver, bronze, which even, you know, the beginning and ending dates of those aren't set in stone. Yeah. Everybody will tell you a different year for the breaks in those.
Yeah, I did a Google search. What comic ages come after the Bronze Age? And it tells me that the Bronze Age was from 1970 to 1985.
Okay.
And that following that is the Modern Age, 1985 to present.
Oh, yeah, just, no.
My brain can't do that. Yeah,
there's that's not possible. You can't take late 80s Marvel, 90s Image, and Tom King from last year and say, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's all in the same age. Yep. It's the same style. And it's it's not.
And you know, when you break it down, when you really go into the minutia, sure, I'm sure there's a lot of books that went out in the Golden Age that you're like, you can't lump those in with.
Right.
Same thing with Silver Age. Same thing with Bronze Age, but still.
There are generals.
1985 to present.
That's huge.
That's
what is that, 38 years? Almost 40 years?
Yeah. That's 38 years, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it's almost 40 years. And the other three are almost that put together. So it's like. Yeah,
exactly, right. It's like you take the first 30, 40 years and you compress it into three different ages.
Yeah, and then everything after that is modern. I don't know.
Like it's like all of us comic fans just kind of lost the strength after whatever. We're good.
Yeah. I don't know what to call it.
I have so many arguments with people over when the Silver Age begins and ends and when the Bronze Age. I'm whatever. Modern Age. Yeah. I get it. All right. You ready to talk about today's comic?
Let's do it.
All right. So today we're looking at The Midsummer Snowstorm, which appeared in Action Comics number 30. This was written by Jerry Siegel, and the art was done by Jack Burnley. I actually took the time this time when I put together the show notes for this issue and then the two stories we're going to do after. Mm-hmm. And I looked at both Mike's Amazing World of Comics and the Grand Comic Database.
Oh, okay.
So both had Jerry Siegel and Jack Burnley on this one. But when we get to the other two, there's some discrepancies.
Okay.
Action Comics number 30 has a cover date of November of 1940, but according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, has an approximate sale date of September 24th, 1940. So here's what happened in the issue, or at least the story. When an out-of-season snowstorm strikes Metropolis, Superman investigates and meets Laura Vogel, who claims to have information. She is kidnapped by some Arabs using a globe gun device, which kills people, leaving only their shadows behind. Meanwhile, Carlton Vogel, an archaeologist and Laura's brother, approaches the lost city of Yolanda, which makes me think of Yolanda, which is somebody's name.
A female, yeah.
So Laura's brother approaches the lost city of Yolanda with his expedition. More Arabs attack using globe weapons, killing Carlton and his men. Superman finally catches up to the group that took Laura, but is knocked out by their weapon. He is captured, but learns that the man behind everything is Zolar. Superman frees himself and Laura, then tries to prevent Zolar from invading Yolanda. Superman is able to catch his foe, but Laura turns out to be an agent of Zolar, as the real Laura was killed sometime earlier. Laura uses the globe weapon on Superman, but it backfires, killing her. And Zolar. Ed, just think about this one.
I thought that I was sitting in a 1940s movie theater seeing the fourth or fifth installment of a movie serial for this story. It felt so much like a movie serial with the weapon, with their strato ships. Is that what
they're
called?
Strato planes.
Is that what they're called?
The bad guys being in the stereotypical garb of World War II Arabs. They were riding camels on the expedition. I mean, everything was just a movie serial to me in this story.
Oh yeah.
And that I don't mean that as a pejorative. I'm not saying that's bad, but that's just definitely the feeling, the mood that it put me in was a movie serial.
It had kind of almost with the strato ships, that's what they called them, with, you know, there's one point where there's just a sky full of these strato ships, which look like something you'd see in Flash Gordon.
Yes.
It really felt like Flash Gordon to me. This, to me, this felt, when I think of Golden Age, this is kind of what I would always picture in my head, mm-hmm. this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Over Superman taking the place of a boxer. To get his career back on track.
Right. A football player to be able to play. Yeah.
So, you know, it makes me wonder, are we now starting to get into that? Are we going to see even more stories like this that feel, like you said, more like an old 40s movie serial? You know, you can hear the news reel announcer before the movie starts. Yeah. And I will say that at one point we get one, just to jump way, way ahead. There's one panel as the strato ships have come to Yolanda and they're getting ready to take over. And we see one panel with the citizens of Yolanda. And I was very happy to see that the way that they dressed was not like every other Middle Eastern character that they've showed so far in this, because they all, whether they were the good guys or the bad guys, they looked exactly the same, not just their dress. They all had the little beards,
right?
And they could have been the same guy. And at first I was like, oh, come on. I know this is the 40s, but we can try a little bit harder, can't we? But the only difference, because we get the bad guys that they refer to as Arabs, you know, it depending on where they're actually from in this region, they may be Arabs, they may be Kurds, they may be Persian. We don't know. They don't give us any clue. Other than saying somewhere within the Sahara Desert, right?
Right.
But the bad guys, the bad ones, they're all wearing the full white head things. And the bad guys had kind of yellow things under their robes. And the good guys had white ones under their robes. Otherwise, looked exactly the same.
Well, and you don't even know necessarily that all of the people that are called good guys or bad guys.
Yeah.
Are all coming from the same area either. I mean, they might be based in the Sahara, but they could be coming from a whole half a world. And, you know, so, and, you know, we can sit here and we can judge by what we feel and know today.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that at this time, honestly, no one called creators on doing stuff like this, and that's why it was done. There has to be situations where if someone had just mentioned, hey, can we just change things up a little bit, can we do anything, it would have changed. But no one did that, and so for years those representations, stereotyped that they are, just continued. It just, you know.
Yeah. And I think we've mentioned it before, so it's like that kind of stuff, as far as I can tell, does not come from a place of hatred. It's ignorance. They just didn't, they didn't know.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you get beyond that though, once you get beyond that, it was a pretty fun story. I really, you know, the first time that those dudes put your helmets on and then they fire that gun and the globe comes out and just disintegrates that woman and there's nothing left but her shadow. It's holy crap, did they just let off like a tiny nuclear bomb or something?
Really?
It was a pretty fun, I felt like this was something that we have yet to we have not come across anything like this in any of these Superman stories so far.
No, this
as crazy as some of those Luther stories and Ultra Humanite stories were, this was something a bit different. And I was really quite shocked. I thought, did Jerry Siegel really write this? Because this, I don't want to say it was more sophisticated, but it almost seemed like it just the storytelling went up a level, because there was a bit more creativity, just the idea of these globes that disintegrated people. What they were using, like radium or something like that.
Radium,
and
yeah,
they even gave you an explanation of why only their shadows were left. I don't remember what the explanation was, but they do give you that. We had the woman that you think is the Vogel lady, and then come to find out she's not. I don't know why I didn't see that coming, because we did see the woman in the car with her get out and die.
Exactly. And I
didn't put, yeah.
I thought it said, let's see. I thought it said something about her being Vogel, but I guess it didn't here looking back. But I assumed it was because the car got stuck and she wasn't content waiting. She had to go meet Superman. So at that point, I assumed that's Vogel. I don't know who her companion is, but
right,
you know,
I did too. I thought, holy crap, they just killed the woman that he had come to. That's going to explain all this.
Exactly.
But then the other woman, like, oh no, I guess she's Vogel.
No, I didn't know who she was, but I didn't think she was Vogel. I don't know. I can't explain why they grabbed her.
Yeah.
I mean, she's working with them, so why would they, you know, I can't.
Right.
I didn't really try to suss that out in my head as I was reading it. I guess I was thinking at the time that it's just a companion. She had an assistant. They killed the one. Well, now they have to make sure to kill the other also. And so that's why they grabbed her out of the car. You know, ultimately, she's going to have the same fate as her companion, who was the more important of the duo. So,
yeah. And I didn't think that she was Laura Vogel until she told Superman she was.
Once
she said that, I was like, oh, okay.
I didn't believe her.
I didn't at any point go, I don't know if I trust this girl. I just hook, line, and sinker. I was like, oh, you know.
There you go.
I thought, she's who she said she was.
Yep. And Why would she say otherwise?
Yeah, yep. I was quite taken aback when she betrayed Superman. But, and we get Lois, I don't understand why Lois was even put in this story. She's there again just to be put in danger
in
so he can save her.
Yeah, to get
in
the way.
And then once he saves her, it's like, all right, she no longer has anything to do with the story.
Yeah, that's I don't know. Maybe to try to gain some female readership in that female was involved in the story. Although females played a pretty important part of the story in general. Without having to be Lois, but. Yeah, I don't know. I guess this was the 1940s equivalent of fridging. I don't know.
But I felt that, first of all, we got Jack Burnley on the art. I've said it before. At this point in the life of the Superman titles, he's been my favorite of the artists that have been on any of these stories.
Sure.
He brings a sense of realism in there that the others don't. And because of that, and then the idea behind the story, that I felt like this was a sci-fi story that was a notch above many of the other sci-fi stories that they've told in these Superman books so far.
I agree. The panel on page, you're looking at the Golden Age compendium book, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Page number 335, where Zolar is, and Superman breaks into his ship, Zolar's ship. That image of Zolar with his shadow behind him, does that not look like a still out of a movie?
Yeah, it looks like the vampire guy. Looks like that old
Nosferatu.
Dracula movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the shadow and the source of light. He even has shadow on it. I'm like, so with that in mind, and the fact that I got a definite movie serial feel from this story, makes me think that that whole feel is what they were going for. They sat down and said, hey, why don't we make this kind of look like this? And so whomever came up with the design of the Stratus ships and, you know, all of these sci-fi, the page before at the bottom where he is talking into the radio, release the meteor death.
Really? Yeah.
That could be a still from a movie. So it's very movie-ish, this particular story. And that has to be what they were going for. There are so many elements that are like that.
Yeah, I think this is probably the first Superman story we could use the word cinematic.
Very much describing
how the story looks.
Yeah. Yeah. You could take this and blow it up a little bit and get 6 or 8 serial parts out of it for movies to show in the theaters at the time, for sure.
Yeah. And a lot of people die in this. in this story.
Yes.
I mean, not as many as the ones that the bad guys kill with the globe weapon.
Just not as many, though, as will die in Gay City here.
That's true.
They kind of up the ante there. But yeah, there's the
Superman and that page that we were looking at where he busts into the ship.
Mm-hmm.
He literally tells Zolar, signal your fleet to destroy itself, or I'll destroy you. And he just doesn't even try to fight. He just like, destroy yourselves. I, Zolar, your supreme commander, demand it. And then all the ships go, just
how many men were in
all
each ship?
All of them dead. Oh, those are big. I guarantee you those are pretty big ships. They at least 100 people on each ship. A crew of 25 at minimum.
The raid on Yolanda, before Superman can do anything, they start destroying the city. So those people die. He uses one of the ships as a bowling ball and knocks out, looks like, 4 other ships. Those ships went down after that. There's a lot of it. Plus the ones that we definitely saw from the nifty little balls of light and the radium and the poof and all that. Yeah, lots of dead people in this story.
Well, and here's something that I didn't quite get earlier in the story. So Superman goes to the park to meet Laura Vogel because she's going to explain to him why there's snow in the middle of the summer. And he's arriving as the woman who turns out to be Laura Vogel is being killed by the globe weapon. He witnesses it because he's looking at it and he's going, what? And then a police officer approaches these the two guys in the car and they put their helmets back on and they hit him with the globe weapon. And Superman just watches that happen as well. And he's like, the blazing globe disintegrated a man, leaving nothing but his shadow. If I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, like, you just saw it with your own eyes with the woman.
Right. Right.
What? You're supposed to be faster and smarter than that, Superman. You just saw it happen with the woman. And now you see the I don't know. I felt that was weird that he's just kind of hanging back. Let's see if the same thing happens to this guy. I guess
we had to have proof that the bad guys were truly bad. Killing one person isn't enough. If they kill two, they're really bad.
Yep.
So,
and they even say as that, I mean, that's a great panel with when the cop, you know, you have the globe there in the corner and he's like shrieking back and it says for fulfilling his duty, the policeman is blasted into nothingness. Yep. You know, really kind of, this is an innocent man that just died.
That's,
you know,
it. Yeah. He did not deserve that.
The woman that we just killed, she chose to be a part of this. You know, so it's not as bad that she died, but this cop wasn't. Yep. He's just trying to do his job.
He was just doing his job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. But I felt like, and you know, I felt the same way with the next two stories we're going to talk about in the next two episodes. It's like starting with this Action Comics number 30, it's almost like, all right, Superman's been taken up to another level. It's not like, holy crap, this is a whole new level. It's like, boop, it just jumped up a notch.
Right.
You know, it's like the art's better. The story is just a slight bit more imaginative. There's some crazy sci-fi elements. But I mean, when we get to the next one, that's a crazy sci-fi, you know, type of hook going on, you know, what's happening to those people as well. That was the one with the radium, wasn't it? Was it?
No, it was this one.
Was it this one? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why he was wanting to take Yolanda, is to get the radium stores.
That's right. My favorite part of the whole story is when Superman is on one of the strato ships, and I think it's Zolar's strato ship, and he literally just slams his foot into the floor and cracks the whole ship in half. Mm-hmm. That was pretty awesome. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It wasn't Zolar's ship, was it? Wasn't it the ship that had him captured? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It's before he gets onto Zolar's ship. That's right.
They were taking him to Zolar because they captured him. And the huge ship snaps in two halves, severed by Superman's powerful muscles.
Yep. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. Jerry Siegel has just entered a new, kind of a new era of story writing here, or he just didn't write it. And there's no way for us to know that.
No, not at this point.
Yeah. Very last panel of the book. This story was pretty funny, where Lois tells Clark that Superman fumbled his attempt to save Laura Vogel, but at least the weather is back to normal. And Clark's response is, "So your idol has fumbled, eh? Pardon me while I laugh." And then you got that's the editor in the background wiping sweat from his brow, because now it's back to being a normal summer's day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's hot again.
Yeah. But all in all, I enjoyed this one. This was a pretty good one. I was not, I know we kind of over explain this a lot when we're talking to the folks who only listen to the episodes, that, we do record three episodes at a time. So you and I often think about, when we're talking about one of these stories, we're thinking about the other two that have either talked about already or are going to talk about. So I was quite pleased with all three stories that we're going to be talking about tonight.
Yeah, I was too. All three together left me with a different feel than sets of three the previous handful of times.
And typically we've been kind of, it's like we'd get like a couple of really great stories in Superman, and then we'd go to Action Comics and it'd be like, that wasn't any good. And then we get back to Superman. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those stories are great. And they've been feeling, the Superman story, the stories that are in Superman have been feeling different than the stories that were in Action. So when I got to this story, after having just read, we did the Superman number 6, 4 stories in that, we get to this one in Action Comics, and it's like, all right, well, that's because it's Action Comics. That's why this feels different. But then the Superman from the Superman issue number 7, those stories had the same kind of feel. So
as this one, not as previously. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he's been at it writing these for what? 5 years? 4 years? 5 years?
Well, if we're talking primarily Superman, April of 38 to...
No, just a year.
Yeah.
Well, a year and a half.
But during that year and a half, he's also writing all these other characters. So you can't write that much and not... I mean, it's a good writer that doesn't grow as the more they write, the more things that they pick up on and start changing the way that they're doing things because of that. So,
and even though it's only been a year and a half, which I didn't necessarily mean to downplay, this is into the 50s, almost 60 different stories that he's written.
Oh yeah,
for this one character, much less any of the other characters that you mentioned. So just by himself, Superman, his understanding of what he wants to do with Superman has to advance. He has done this 60 times. Number 61, it's impossible that it would feel like number 1 at this point. Yep. There's just no way. So
you think about those first 5-6 Superman Action Comics stories, and again, you're talking about him taking the place of a football player because the coaches are crooked. This is leaps and bounds above those stories.
Yeah. This is a much more thought out, a much more involved story that he's relaying in this one.
Yeah. Yep. Let me just flip through it here real quick before I was about to say, I don't have anything else to say, but I need to start taking advantage of the fact that I get to edit these episodes. And so
there you go.
We can have some dead space during the live.
Yeah, that's it. You can. Yep.
I get to take that out when we're.
Editor Steven can do his magic.
That's right. I am in control.
Yeah. Put in little voices and stuff like that, like people do on other shows.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I have anything else to say. It was a fun story.
Very much so. This is definitely, I think, one from the golden age that I could recommend. Well, I've never read. I don't like. Try this story.
Yeah.
Read this. Yeah. See what you think about this. Forget that it's Superman. Just read it as a superhero and see what you think.
Yeah. And I want to real quick, because I notice whenever I'm putting these show notes together, a lot of times over on Mike's Amazing World of Comics, he has some notes for a lot of these issues. Let me see what he has to say for this one. Comments. George Taylor is still the editor of the Daily Planet in this story, indicating it must occur chronologically prior to the first story of Superman 7.
Yes.
Where Perry White takes... Was Perry White in...
He calls him White when he walks in. So, White, do you got you have a job for us?
Holy crap, I didn't even notice that.
Yep, that is the first... First story of issue 7 is the first appearance of Perry White.
Literally the first word balloon of the story. But we're jumping ahead. So, yeah, wow. All right. Anything else you want to say about this one?
No, sir. I think I'm good.
All right, folks. I want to thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Until next week, I'm Steven. That's Ed.
Howdy.
Bye. Or
ciao.
Howdy.
Wrong end. Oops, my bad.
Trying to say howdy backwards. You do have to.
I don't know. That's some Monty Python crap there. I don't know how to do that.
You've been listening to the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter under the handle at Supes Super Show. That's at SUPS Super Show. And continue the conversation at the Super Show Forum at forums.justanotherfanboy.com. We also encourage you to rate the show wherever available and share this podcast with a friend. All links will be in the show notes.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.